Cloud. Okay, we're good. Thanks again, Melody, for being here with us to conduct this oral history interview of you for the exhibition Fashion Nork Atelier to Runway. If you could start by please introducing yourself.
Hello, my name is Melody Mladenko Asherman. I am a Newark resident, Newark born and raised, Newark girly. My family's from Liberia, West Africa, so I identify as Liberian, but I am first generation and proud to be a Newark girl.
I love that. Thank you. For our first question, I'd like to ask you if you could think back to young Melody Asherman and her experiences growing up in Newark and being raised in a Liberian household, how would you describe your first fashion memory or memories?
Young Melody in Newark was that was a great time. My grandmother came to like came from Liberia when I was 6 weeks old to help take care of me. So outside, I always joke about this. Outside was Newark, New Jersey, but inside the house was Liberia, West Africa. Again, as I said, like I'm first generation, so I've always had like both of best worlds, if you would. From what I remember from pictures, I always like had to dress up. Like I was always doing the most. I hopefully I can find a picture and show you because I was like a young fashionista in my mind. I would put on all my favorites at one time. I would say as far as the memories, I just remember going, my mother always made sure that I was put together. And I think that definitely helped with me as far as fashion, how I dressed or how I presented myself to the world. My hair was always laid. She didn't have to spend a lot of money as far as clothes, but she just knew how to put pieces together that made me look good. And I always say that you don't have to have $1 million to look good. As long as you have the idea and you have, you just know how to, you don't need to have a lot of money to look expensive or need to spend a lot of money to look good. And I think that was shown to me at a very early age. She always took a lot of pictures of me as to why now I'm always taking pictures now. So she loves to tell me like, oh, how I like to bluff, but it really is her who created this monster, if you would. So yeah, I really would say that my mother and my aunts definitely helped shape the fashionista that I am today.
Sure, absolutely. I'm curious, like, do you remember anything that your mom or your aunts would wear? Like, I
So
don't know,
that,
like, is there
oh
an
my
outfit in
gosh.
your mind or like a lipstick color, like
Yes.
anything?
Yes. My mother was the blazer, the original blazer jean girl. Like that is how I remember my mother growing up. And to this day, I have like 1,000 blazers in my closet. I remember even being in college. I don't know like how I related to, because when I was growing up, she was in school. And I remember her going to school in cute jeans and a cute blazer and a top, and her hair would be pulled back. That was my mother's look, and I thought she looked fantastic. So it was just funny, ironically, like when I was in college towards, graduating, that's how I started to dress. And even now, like I am a diehard blazer girl because I feel like a blazer is just like completes the look. It goes from chill to elevated really quickly. And I have an aunt who swears by linen. She's like the linen guy. And she would have like this big black curly hair and it was long. And I sometimes see myself wearing the same like big, big black hair or big hair because that's what I saw growing up. And as far as like my grandmother who came here from Liberia, most of her clothes were all African. So just seeing those things, I guess I kind of like without realizing unconsciously put that or made that into my style and how I dress today.
Yeah, I love that. For my next question, I kind of started with like my experience as well to kind of maybe paint a picture for you. But so I have studied the history of Black dressmakers being what we were identified as before we were called Black designers. And grew up watching women in my family sew at home. Like my grandmother specifically, was always making garments for herself or for family members, like for church or other special occasions, like weddings and graduation. And so you spoke, very beautifully about like how you witness certain maybe aesthetic choices from your mom and your aunts and your grandmother. But I would also love to hear if you grew up witnessing anyone in your family create garments for themselves or others. Like, was there, I know in West Africa, I think you call them tailors. Like, were there tailors in your family making
I'm the first
garments? And
one. I'm the
oh,
first
really?
one. I'm the first one. I just, it's so, it's funny how life happens. Like I thought, and I was laughing about it today as I was driving home. I was like, the event that I'm having next month across the street from there, I would take the bus to go home. And it makes me giggle because at that age, I was like, I'm going to be Beyonce's backup dancer. Like that was like what I wanted to do as an adult, or I said that I was going to be the first Liberian president of Liberia. Obviously, that no longer is true because we've already had our first Liberian female president. But those were like my thoughts growing up. I nothing as far as fashion I ever thought that I was even going to go into. It wasn't until I went to college that I joined an organization and like, you know, putting on shows and runways and putting things together is when I kind of like something clicked. I was like, yeah, fashion is what I really want to do. Designing is what I love doing. Creating is what I love doing. Making people feel beautiful. If you, I always feel like if you look good, you feel good, you do good. It's just how it like happens. It's like a ripple effect. So there were no necessarily tailors or designers in my families, but the women in my family, once again, were very stylish in my eye. And that's just, and it's funny because years later I found out that one of my aunts used to do runway shows when she first came here. And I was like, oh my gosh, she's like so gorgeous when she first came. Not saying that she's not gorgeous now, but she really was like reminiscent to me of Naomi Campbell when she first started coming up. So it wasn't until years later that my mother was like, oh, did you know that your aunt used to do runway shows too? And I'm like, I had no idea. I just It's, you know, like just having that influence around you. Sometimes you feel like it's just something that you came up with, not knowing that seeds have been planted all of this time. And this person used to do runway, or this person, you know, used to. So it's just all of those things fed me in some type of way.
I love that. And do you did your did they ever explain what kind of show, like what the garments look like? Did you ever see them? Or okay.
I didn't see them. I didn't find out until last year, actually. And I reminded my aunt, or 2 years ago, I was like, oh, mom told me that you used to model in shows. And she was like, oh, well, I forgot about that. I guess like different stores, department stores used to call her and ask her to come and, you know, walk for them. She was very slender, chocolate, again, the big hair. So she had this like very exotic look. And she used to model and totally forgot everything about it. And I did it in
Wow.
college.
I love that. That's making me think of some other questions, but so for our next question, how would you describe your design origin story? And you spoke a little bit about it in terms of, you know, when you got to college and being able to participate in, I guess, different fashion groups, but how would you describe your design origin story? What inspired you to start sewing and then ultimately pursue fashion design in your studies? And this can include what inspired you to start taking sewing classes in Newark, as well as your journey to Parsons.
Okay, so I've always been tall as long as I can remember. And I remember growing up, there was no like size tall for, you know, for women. So I would always have like high waters. I hated it, despised it. And it's funny, like, I don't know, maybe having to deal with those things growing up somehow also translated into when I design now. If you see, like, it's very like dramatic, very long, there's trains, there's, I think that's kind of like, as I always say, like I'm the woman that I designed for because I wasn't able to get that look. So now that I'm able to design that look, I'm always run for it. But that was just, that's a sidebar. As far as like what led me into design, it was my second year at Tuskegee University. I joined this organization called Ravy View Modeling Troupe. And it was a fashion group, a fashion organization, where they used to put on shows, walk for other organizations, anything fashion related, we did it at school. And I want to say it was probably my third year. I don't know what clicks for me, But I was just like, I know I want to do something fashion related, but I don't know what. And I remember calling my mom, like, I know I'm doing psychology right now, but I want to transfer to business because, of course, I didn't. Tuskegee is not known for fashion. They used to have a fashion program, but they no longer had it. So in my mind, I'm like, business would be like the easiest way for me to get to it because I had this creative mind. Mind you, I don't know anything about fashion. I just feel like because I put on clothes that I knew everything about it. She was just like, girl, please finish that degree and please come home. So I'm like, okay, so that's not going to work. So I remember applying to SCAD my last year and didn't get in. I graduated on a Sunday and I found out on May 5th of 2011 that I did not get into the college that I wanted to get into. And well, the school, excuse me, because this was going to be my master's program. And I was devastated because I had no backup plan. I just knew that I was never coming back to New Jersey. I was going to be this big time designer in Atlanta. And then I ended up coming home and I remember watching TV with my cousin depressed on the couch because again, there was no plan B. And I saw a lady, her name was Miss Rosario. She had a school in Newark. She went to FIT. And I guess because we didn't have any fashion schools in Newark, she decided that she was going to come home and, you know, start a school. And mm-hmm. that is where I learned how to, like, you know, really, like, understand the sewing machine. Because when I looked back at the pieces that I sent to SCAD, I totally understand why they told me no. I totally get why they said, yeah, you're not ready. So, and I remember my cousin said, call them and ask them why, you know, they told you no. And she said, you know, this basically is telling me that my sewing sucked. So that's why I ended up going to the school in Newark. And then a year later, I applied to Parsons and got in. So it started with a like idea at Tuskegee, like, this is what I want to do. And then I got a sewing machine. I started sewing and it just kind of like, this ripple effect that really happened or started since like 2010.
Nice. And when you got your sewing machine while you were at Tuskegee, were you making your own clothes then?
Or yes,
I was.
I didn't make it for the fashion show. I made it for myself. Cause I was like, you know, you first get something, you first tap into something like, oh my gosh, like I just want to make everything. I remember my graduation shoot. I made all the outfits for that. The first sewing machine I got from a thrift store. So it was like very like raggedy or whatever. So I went to, no shade. I went to, I think Walmart and I got a Martha Stewart, the beginner machine. And then that's when I was like, I felt more comfortable. It was more modern. It was easier for me to like figure it out. And then once I got to the school in Newark, you know, they were teaching you hands-on this, what this does. And, you know, this is how you change a bobbin and, you know, the little things, whatever. So I no longer was like nervous. Mm-hmm. And then once I got the hang of that, I started doing pattern construction and pattern making, all of that. I was like, okay, yeah, like I'm ready. Like, let's do this. And when Parson says, come on, I'm like, okay, I'm ready.
So that.
Yeah.
I was going to ask, like, when you first started sewing, was it like draping or were you just like, let me just, or were you just, yeah, was it more like draping and putting things together? Were you using patterns?
Everything. Like, okay, how can I do this? Yes, I definitely got a lot of patterns from Walmart. That was my best friend. I would go to Walmart and be like, oh, I think I could do this. And then like, once you start with pattern making and learn how to pattern make, then you know how to manipulate patterns to like make it look, you know, how you know, want to make something else. So pattern making definitely, when I took that class, definitely helped me to understand how I could like maneuver, like, okay, maybe if I take it in here, then I could, you know, make it look like this. But I was just eager to like learn. I was like soaking everything up. I wanted every pattern. I wanted to sew everything because I was just so excited with this like newfound love that I didn't know was inside me.
That's beautiful.
Thank you. I just got all excited again.
I think it's beautiful how these things call us and it's just like,
right?
I don't know. It's just like a part of us and it always finds its way to manifest regardless.
My mother tells my aunt all the time, like, I had no idea that she wanted to, like, this is what she wanted to do. If she wanted to do this, we could have sent her a long time ago. But I feel like everything happens for a reason. I needed to go to Tuskegee to find that passion. I needed to get out of Jersey to find myself and to really, like, you know, tap into the environment around me and just be open to that. Maybe had I never left Jersey, I wouldn't necessarily have known that. I mean, eventually, you know, what's for you will come to you. But who's to say at 40, I would have been like, okay, this is what I want to do versus at 20, right. 20 years old. You know what I mean? So I'm glad I would do it all over again. I would go to Tuskegee again and, you know, then decide that I want to do fashion. Then I wouldn't change anything about it because I learned so much about myself. I still have really great, solid friendships, people who I really feel are like my soulmates. Like all of those things led me to where I am today.
Right. And so for the next question, I think you also touched on this a little bit, but how did your family accept the fact that you wanted to be a designer? Did you grow up seeing examples of pursuing creative pathways for a profession, even if it wasn't seeing other fashion designers in your family? Like, did you grow up seeing examples of people being creative, and what kind of support do you feel like you got from family after you decided you wanted to be a designer?
It was, again, when you, like, coming from another country, there's no, like, creativity is not something that is, like, you get paid for, right? It's like, you're a dentist, you're a doctor, you're an engineer, you're something of, you know, have some type of gist behind your title. So to say you want to be a designer is like, okay, how is that lucrative? How are you changing the world? What is, like, so impactful about, you know, designing? Initially, when I told my mother, it was just like, girl, yeah, no. Like, that's not happening. Please get your psychology degree and come home. So it wasn't until after graduating from college and then on my own deciding to go to, you know, take the course. And she was very supportive. She's like, you know, this is something you really want to do. She too went to the Saturday classes with me, you know, to support me. Cause I guess she really saw like how important it was to me and how serious I was about it. And then when I got into Parsons and then when I started to do shows in 2015, I think is when everyone was like, oh, so this is not just a play for you. This is something like you really are into. Because I hadn't, at that time, I wasn't sewing collections. So when people came to the show and they saw an actual collection, it was like, oh, so this is legit. So it took time for them to get on board and to really see, like, this is what I want to do. This is what I'm really passionate about. And now it's like, what can we do? What can I help you with? Do you want coffee? Can, you know, like, how can I assist you? And I'm happy that I do have a supportive family and, you know, supportive friends, a supportive circle, should I say, around me, that believe in the vision. Like, even sometimes when I'm just like, oh, I'm tired or I need a break or whatever, it's like, you got this, like, your time is coming. Like, they're always pouring into me, always showing love, always supporting me. So I am forever grateful for that, because there's some people who, you know, tell their family members that, you know, something that they're interested in, and it's like, you can go to hell, like, whatever, like, figure it out, versus like, how can we help you? How can we assist you to get to the level that you are trying to get to?
It's amazing. I think I want to talk about, because you mentioned, like, in 2015, there was a show that happened that, mm-hmm. like, so I would love to hear, like, about what that show was. And I guess if you could fold that into this question that I'm about to ask. So the question is, how influential has the NORC Librarian or the NORC fashion community in general been to your journey as a designer? This could include anything you think is special about the city of NORC that has shaped or informed you as a designer. For example, local fashion shows that were happening in the city or that really helped you showcase your work, any mentorship from older designers, et cetera. So any ways that the NORC fashion or NORC librarian or NORC librarian fashion community has influenced you on your journey. Because I feel like one of my best childhood friends is librarian. I have a lot of West African friends, and I do know that there are, like, shows that happen in Philly or shows that happen in NORC or whatever. So yeah, if, and then, like, anything you could say about that.
So shout out to the city of Newark, because one thing about Newark, they always come look for me. Always. They always somehow, even I have a best friend, we laugh all the time. Like, she'll send me a flyer with my clothes on it. Or I can't say when it happens, but whenever it did happen in Newark, noticed who I was as a Newark designer, the support has been endless. They reach out to me to do shows. They reached out to me to, as far as like working with the nonprofit or the Newark Library or the Newark Museum. Like the whole thing with at the Newark Museum that happens in July. That was a conversation, funny enough, after we spoke, we got off the phone. I think like an hour later, I was on the phone with somebody from the museum. And we were just throwing ideas around. And then I was in Vegas for my best friend's birthday. And I get a text like, hey, like, you know, and I have forgotten all about it. Like, hey, like, let's talk. We have something coming up. Like, we would really love for you to be a part of it. For me to be the only designer there. Me able to like showcase my work without it being like 1,000 other designers. It just felt very special. It felt like I'm being seen, that I'm heard, that I'm being felt, that people take to my designs. I mean, think about how many designers or how many creatives create with their whole being and aren't recognized. You know what I mean? Not by the family where they, but not only by my family, but where I'm from. That's huge. So I'm forever grateful to the city of Newark. I'm forever grateful to the creatives that support me, that reach out to me, that show love to me. Also different, not just Liberian, but other African people have reached out to me as far as me putting my clothes into their shows. So the love from Newark, it just hits different. There's, I don't know how else to say it, but I am forever grateful to the city of Newark. As far as the show that I did in 2015, a friend of mine, she's also a designer. And I think at the time I was like spending crazy money to like be in these shows, like fly to LA and fly here to Miami, all this stuff. And I just told her, I said, why are we going to spend all of this money to go be in someone else's show when we could have our own? And we did it. And we did that in 2015. And I promise you, since then, it has not stopped. It just has not stopped. There's been one show, and from one show, that's another opportunity. And someone's like, hey, I was at this show and I saw your clothes. Like, I would love to work with you. Then it went from one photographer, like, oh, I love this dress. Take the orange dress, for instance. I made that dress in 2019. People are still ordering it. People still want to shoot it. Like, it's even going to be in, you know, the exhibit. So it's just like from one conception from a photographer that I had never met who lives in Miami. Mm-hmm. All we did was follow each other. And I think she was coming to New York or something like that. And I said, hey, like, whenever you're in New York, like, let me know. Like, I would love to work with you. She works with gorgeous Black women. The whole team is all females, the creative director, the stylist. I was like, oh, a whole female team, like, sign me up. Because usually it's men that are the photographers or, you know. So it was just great to see like a full female team. And she was like, you know, just send me the dress. And initially I was like, do what? But from trusting that, you know, that one experience has opened up so many opportunities for me. So I'm just grateful. I really am.
Yeah. Would you mind mentioning some of the people that you've done, like some of the organizations you've done fashion shows
yes.
with? Like, I know there's been Newark Fashion Forward.
Yes.
But are there any other thing? I mean, well, you mentioned the Newark Public Library. The event in July, Maria, was for the Newark Black Film Festival.
Yes.
They had an amazing fashion show there.
November.
Or just any other venues you could think of, because we're also trying to highlight like venues where in Newark that have fashion
the
shows.
The Haynes Building. Yeah. It's
with artistic passion and purpose.
Yes,
or,
thank you.
Yes.
Thank you.
Yes.
Yes. Like, oh my God, who did I work with? Yes, that was that show in November. That was my second time doing the show with them. I also used to teach sewing classes there. They partnered with Rutgers. So yeah, it was a great opportunity. Again, I didn't know Michael. Michael somehow found me, and then it just circles, you know, just it just went from there. He had good energy, I had good energy. I usually try to come into the room or to a space with good energy. So when people see my work and when people meet me, it's like, oh, you know, like let's work or let's. So that's just kind of how like things have happened for me, honestly. Like they fall into my lap. But also, it's not just like, oh, it's falling into my lap and then I work. It's like, I'm sewing, I'm always creating, you know, building connections. And then because I'm praying for these things to happen and I'm actually doing the work on the back end, it just aligns. Thank God. So, yeah, I'm grateful for the opportunities that continue to come my way. And I'm just going to keep, I'm going to keep creating.
I love that. I'm like, faith without works is dead. That's
hello. That's what the words say.
So another question, we're getting led to the end of the questions, but in what way has your West African background influenced your design aesthetic or process? So this can include your choice of fabrics, garment sizing, design or sewing techniques. Is any of that influenced by your West African background?
All of it is influenced. I remember growing up, my mother, first of all, her closet game when it comes to African clothing is untouched. It's unmatched. I don't know anyone who has more pieces than her, more colorful, vibrant colors than her. I don't know. I don't even have it. I can't even touch the hem of her collection when it comes to the clothing. And I just remember growing up, again, the blazer, she would always have her head wrapped. And I was always like, I just love that about, you know, I love that. Again, going to college, I would wrap my head, things that I saw growing up. So when it came to designing, of course, it was like the fabric is, it has its own story. It has its own melody. Like when the fabric walks down the runway, like it speaks to you. And it's not just with African fabric, that's just with fabric period. Designs, depending on how like this is designs are. And I always say that when I buy fabric, it has to like speak to me, like I'm like drawn to it. And like the color patterns that we use, the designs, it's just, it's unmatched. So when it comes to, and I always say a design for the woman that is bold and beautiful and doesn't mind being the center of attention, is like, even if you made just a regular pencil skirt with that fabric, someone is going to come up to you and be like, oh my God, I love that. Like they're intrigued. Now a conversation has been struck up. Just like how a woman decides what type of perfume that she want to go for. Is she going for something that's very laid back or something that like speaks before she walks into the room? That is the fabric that I always go for. It's like, did you see that? Who is that? Like I want to know who this person is. So even when I'm sewing, the music that I'm listening to, I'm playing African music in the background because when it's going down the runway, like, what is the story that I wanted to tell? So the music influences it. The patterns influences it. I always go for the bold color because I'm a bold woman, and that's the woman that I design for.
Yeah. So could you talk a little bit about, like, where your textiles are from? Like, where do you source them? How do you find them?
So usually when I go to Liberia, I go with an empty suitcase and I come back with fabric. If I'm shopping locally, there's Rosanna fabric. She's Ghanaian on William Street, downtown Newark, or Makola, also Ghanaian. That's on Lyons Avenue. But for the most part, like that's where I get like my fabric from if I'm locally. But when I go home, I like to bring stuff because it just feels more authentic to me. And like the purple dress that people absolutely love, one of the dresses that will be shown, I got that when I was in Liberia in 2021 and I sat on that fabric. I didn't touch it. I was just like, I looked at it. I was like, I know that I need it. What, how am I going to design it yet? I don't know. But once I started designing, it just came to me. So yeah.
Nice. Do you sketch or anything before you design, or do you just kind of have an image in your head and then you make?
For me, I just start sewing because I'm scared that I'm going to like lose the idea. I'm very impulsive when it comes to sewing, unless it's like something that I'm like the purple dress in my mind. I'm like, okay, this is what I know that I'm going to make. Like it's stuck engraved in my head. But when I'm like sewing, like I almost feel like a child is in the candy store. I'm like, I want this and I want this and I want this. And I have to like, I may think that I want to make one thing. And then when I start designing something, it turns into something else.
Okay. So could you also maybe speak a little bit to like, other than like, you spoke about like your West Africa, like your West African background and the cultural influences there, but are there any other, like, could you speak to what or who else has influenced your work as a designer? Like, are there, like,
Christian
even
Dior.
For your tool? Okay. Okay.
Christian Dior. Full stop. To this day, his clothes still remain top tier. The way he designed, the way how it fit the woman's body, it's just his creativity is just, it's very inspirational. Like, for him to be a man, but the way that he designed for women, it was just, it was beautiful. Like, it's just the elegant lines, just the way it accentuates the woman's body. And it wasn't anything that was like, I don't want to say distasteful, because, you know, the people, how they want to design is how they want to design, but it was elegant. It was graceful. And when I'm making a train or anything, I think about how like it flows or how it's, so he definitely is an inspiration when it comes to designing. I absolutely love him. He is my favorite designer of all time. I may just name my son Christian. I just absolutely love his design. And what I also love too is that he wasn't like someone who started at a very, who became famous at a young age. I think sometimes society tells us that, you know, at 30, you should be married and have your first child and, you know, all of these things that society tells us that we're supposed to have. And I just admire his story that he wasn't super young when he became famous. And even though I've been designing for a while, I'm still not where I want to be as of yet. And it could be the same, you know, similar story. Like, I didn't get my first real break until I was 40. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
God, please don't wait that long, but just follow me. So, yes, I admire his work. It's just beautiful. And I pray that, you know, when I'm gone, that people will say the same thing about my designs. Like, I loved her aesthetic. I love that she had, you know, different women there. It wasn't just, you know, light skin or dark skin, or, you know, that everyone felt represented. I don't just make clothes for a size six. One of my brand, my past brand ambassador, she was a size 16 and she was 5'11" and she was chocolate. So everyone should be able to, women, of course, should look at my clothes and feel like, wow, like I can see myself, or I can see myself wearing this. It's not just meant for one size, because women come in different sizes and shapes. I'm a curvy girl and I'm almost 5'11".
I love that, because it seems like, yeah, when I'm thinking about Christian Dior, right, I'm thinking of, I mean, I'm like thinking of like the 50s or something. Like, I'm thinking of very cinched in waist, mm-hmm. and all of that. And I think that's so interesting, because yours is kind of like the complete opposite in that it takes up a lot of space. But I think mm-hmm. that what I'm hearing you say is, it's like the kind of philosophy around like a beautiful, attention drawing woman, mm-hmm. that is like the ethos of it. It just in like,
absolutely.
Your own like, interpretation. Yeah. Or your like interpretation of like elegance, which I mm-hmm. think is amazing. And so when was your brand Everything Rouge founded, and what inspired its creation? Was it as soon as you got home from Tuskegee, or was it like, okay, I took these sewing classes, I'm in Parsons, now let's make a brand? When did the brand come about?
The brand officially started January 2015. Okay. I was sewing before that, and I think I was trying to like figure out like what's going to be the name, or, you know, but red is my favorite color. And I felt like everything red was like too like blah, but I wanted something that sounded very like rouge, like it had like a little French, you know, turn to it. So I was like, okay, let's go with the rouge. And then I was trying to figure out how to say like my mother's tribe, their Pele, Kpelle. And I remember calling my aunt, like, how do you say red and Pele? But the way she said it, I was like, this is not going to roll off the tongue like the way that I need to. So rouge, I was like, it like gets the party going. Like, what's going on? Like, red to me just doesn't signify just like, oh, it's bright, it's in your face. It's, you know, it's a very bold color. It takes a lot to wear, you know, it's a statement. Like, you're saying like, hello, regardless of if you're saying, physically saying hello. It signifies passion, it signifies love, and all of those things I have when it comes to fashion or design. Like, I'm very passionate about my work and my work ethic and how does it translate to, you know, people, consumers, or whoever's coming to my show. Like, how do they feel? Like, do they feel like encouraged? Do they feel feminine? Do they feel bold? Do they feel confident? Like, I want you to feel, when you put my clothes on, I want you to feel like you're the baddest chick that ever walks this earth. That is what I want you to feel like, because that's how I feel when I walk outside. I mean, today's a little sketchy for me, but on the weekends, it's like, I'm that girl. When I put my perfume on, it's like, I don't have to say anything. When they say, oh my God, you smell good, I don't look for anyone to look at me and say, smell good. I said, thank you, because I know it's me. Like, I want you to feel that sense of confidence when you put on an Everything Rouge piece.
Amazing. I'm also wondering about like how the collaborations with stylists and things came about. I mean, you spoke a little bit about the Florida situation where they were like, you established a relationship on social media. They sent you, or asked you to send down a garment so that they could shoot it. But I also know from talking to you, you've worked with a bunch of other designers. You've worked with performers who've worn your garments on stage while they're like performing their music. People have worn your garments on the red carpet. So I'm wondering if you could maybe speak again to me and to Maria a little bit more about like those experiences and maybe some highlights, things that you consider highlights in terms of those. And it's also making me think of unisex. Like, there have been men who've worn your gowns. Like, so I'm just wondering, like, if you could, yeah.
So Instagram is a beautiful tool if you know how to use it. thank God that it's even existent, because Instagram came about before I started designing, but I didn't really tap in until I really started designing. And it's really word of mouth. And I think it's your energy. If people feel like, you know, you're easy to work with, or you're easy, you know, you have great communication skills. I hit this person up and she was willing to work with me. You know, I think those things helped me, but honestly, word of mouth. That's how I feel like through Instagram, of course, like working with one stylist. Like recently, I can't think of the first stylist name, but I've worked with a stylist named Isaiah a couple of times. He saw my work from a previous his name is Antonio. The first stylist I worked with is Antonio. So people see like, oh, she's worked with this person, so they feel like you're credible. Same thing with me. Like, I look to see who you've worked with. What do your pictures look like? Does it make sense? Because you don't want to like have this like great, you know, you create something wonderful and someone's work is half par. Like, you want the collaboration to make sense. So, and luckily for me, and sometimes the stylists don't tell me who the client is, just say my client. And then after the fact, I see it, I'm like, wow, like, that's crazy. I didn't realize that we were shooting somebody from Glee. Like, I wish you would have told me that. You know what I mean? So sometimes I don't know necessarily who the client is, but because I like their work ethic, or I like how they, the people that they work with, because again, I don't want my work to only look one way. I want it to have like a array. Like, you can look through my portfolio and be like, oh, she's worked with this person, or, you know, she can work with different body types. It's not just only a size 6 or a size 2. She can work with everyone. So that's a lot of times how it's happened. It's been word of mouth for me and through Instagram. Skylar, she is an influencer. The shoot that I did with Mark C with the orange dress that had been in Vogue photo of the day multiple times. But she reached out to me and was like, oh yeah, I saw the work that you did with Mark C. So that's why I'm reaching out to you. So even though I've not necessarily met all of these people, but the work ethic or the dresses has spoken for themselves, and that has opened doors for me.
Yes. Can you just like, I don't know, show off and like name drop some people? Like,
Okay,
oh,
so
like who's
Big
the person from
Lotto.
Glee? Yes, let us know so we can put
So,
this in here.
okay, so
Like,
Big Lotto, I'm still excited about that. Happens in 2021 with Interview Magazine. It was a
I didn't know it was Interview Magazine. Okay,
it was Interview
continue.
Magazine. The stylist reached out to me and she was like, oh, we're gonna be shooting, you know, at the time she went by Mulatto. We're shooting Mulatto, and I was like, and I guess she was
That's
like, oh, do you know who
crazy.
that is? I'm like, girl, I know exactly who Mulatto is. And you know, she was trying to figure out like, you know, what dresses to go for her. And I Ravy name drop. She shoots for Adele. They're on tour right now. That's Adele's photographer. She also shoots for the Carters. Beyonce, I love you so much, and I can't wait to design a piece for you. Hopefully you see this somehow. I don't know. She shot that pink dress and no one else wore it after she shot it. So when the stylist reached out to me, I was like, oh, this would be perfect. Like, it hasn't been shot. And then Lotto loves it. The only thing is that Lotto wanted her abs to show, which I totally understand. So she pulled it up in the front. But yeah, that dress was actually made in a very small room, like before I moved into my house now. So it was just crazy how to be like how it was like in this very like confined space and how it's able to like make this like very big dress. Another person, Bushi Shua, she I absolutely love. She also has works with Beyonce. That's how I feel like the stars are aligned for us. Oh, and Beyonce is a Virgo, like myself. Her birthday is the day after mine. So another reason why I feel like we're gonna meet. But Bushi Shua, she is from South Africa. She's a South African artist. And I forget the name of the concert that was happening, but a lot of artists were flying in. So I'm like, she posted about being in Newark. And I'm like, what is this girl from South Africa? What is she doing in Newark? So I shot my shot in the comments. I was like, oh, I'm a designer. I would love to work with you. She hits me back like, oh, great. Hit me in the DMs. I slid in the DMs. We're talking, we're chatting. And then I just like very boldly was like, oh, who's designing for you? Who's styling you? Who's doing this? Who's doing that? She's like, oh, I don't have anybody. So, well, I'll be your stylist. I'll be your designer. So I took her to Jersey Garden. We got some pieces from there. I made the dress and jacket for her. And it was great. And it was just like a moment that like a reminder, like if you've ever doubted yourself in that moment, it was just like, don't doubt yourself because you shot your shot and it landed and look where you are now. So, oh, and then of course, still the biggest highlight right now for me is Juneteenth 2020. My dress was shot, well, not shot, but it was in the middle of Times Square. Shout out to Mark C. NASDAQ reached out to him and, you know, he has a he has the catalog, like big time catalog. And that dress actually he shot three pieces for me in March or February of that year. NASDAQ reaches out to him, asks him to send, you know, pictures that, you know, potentially that they'll show or, you know, whatever. So out of the pictures that he sent, that orange, you know, the orange dress, he sent that to them. I think they shows like they showed six of his pieces, but just out of the six pieces, one of those was my dress. And I was just like, everybody knows where Times Square is. Like if you even people that don't live in the US know what Times Square is. So to be recognized or to have my dress up there for thousands of millions of people to see was just like, okay, God, I see you. I hear you. Noted.
Yes, flexing them. I love it.
Right.
I'm like, if we recording this for history, we gotta drop names.
Yes. Actually, another great photographer that I love, his name is Cam. He is from the Bronx, Jamaican photographer. Found me also on Instagram. He shot the orange dress. I think he was like the third or fourth person to shoot it. But it was just like just the way he I would have to show send you some of his work so you could see, but he gets it. Like he just gets it. The model is gorgeous. it was a black dress that he shot on a beach somewhere. You don't even know that you're in New York. You think you're somewhere like out of the country. Like just his locations, the models that he chooses, the way he puts the pieces together, it's just like, yeah, this makes sense. So I would say him and Mark really, and Ravi, of course, those three photographers really set the standard for me when it came to shooting, because their quality work is so crisp, they're very professional, and it just like, it just elevated the brand for me. And it's like when photographers reach out to me, I'm just like, I look at that portfolio, I'm like, does it look like this? Is it better? Really, because it's like you put all of this like time and, you know, energy, and my knee is burning me while I'm sewing, but I'm like putting all this time, and if the photographer is not gonna execute it, it's like, what's the point? What's the point? It's like making a big Thanksgiving meal and nobody shows up to dinner.
I love that. So the final question. You've instructed fashion workshops with the North Base Fashion Collective, like Artistic Passion and Purpose. You've spoken at several events for up and coming entrepreneurs. What are your dreams for the impact / legacy of your brand, Everything Rouge?
For me, I definitely want, I love making women feel beautiful and confident. And I feel like that's one of my purposes here in life. I feel like women, we go through so much. We're told that we need to look this way, and you need to be thin, and you need to, you know, you need to be light, or you have, it's so many beauty standards, quote unquote, like what beauty is. And I want to break that mold. Like, women aren't just one thing. Like, we could be super feminine, but we can be, you know, if we got to get to it, we got to be hunters, we can be that too. And I think this on a personal level, I feel like life has made me become this, like, not just like on hustle mode or grind mode, but I kind of, not that I lost my sense of femininity, but I feel like I had to be like, I had to be this like person, because like life had like, not beat me up, but I had gone through so much, and I just kind of felt like I couldn't be feminine. I had to put that to the side to like get through what I need to go through. And I think now at 35, I am now getting back to that soft part of me, rediscovering that part of who I feel like I may have lost or I couldn't be in order to survive, because I was in survival mode. And now I'm thriving when it comes to creating. I don't want to just create and survive. That no longer serves me. I'm no longer creating and survival mode. I'm now thriving when it comes to creativity. And I just feel like that's a message that women need to know, that you can be feminine, you can be strong. Like, it doesn't, you know, you can be vulnerable, but you could be tough. Like, but I also want them to feel confident. And, you know, women that are going to come up after me, my nieces and my daughters, they may not look like what, you know, the world said a beauty, you know, the most beautiful woman is. Because the most beautiful woman is, every time you see it, is a white, thin woman. I'm not a white, thin woman. So I want the women, and not just Black women, I want all women to feel beautiful when they, you know, they wake up in the morning, or when they put, you know, my designs on, or whether if it's not necessarily me putting my clothes on, but if I'm styling them or talking to them in passing, whatever, I want people to feel confident about themselves. And I think it's very important, because again, like I said, when you feel good, you look good, you do good. So that's my legacy that I want to leave on this world.
I love that. Okay, I'm about to stop recording.
Okay.